Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode, we've got Major League Fishing Pro Brett Height in the studio. We talk about Brett's approach to fishing grass, pumping unleaded gas into a diesel truck, and Brett's luxury turtle. Stick around. We've got the normal three guys here, but we've got a really cool guest. We've got Brett Height. Brett's got a long list of accomplishments in his bass fishing career. He's now a Major League Fishing Pro, multiple wins, over five wins over at Bass and FLW, over 2 million in career winnings. I know him as a super versatile angler, but he's widely known as the best vibrating jig, chatterbait angler, probably on the planet. And we're lucky because he doesn't live far away. He's a buddy, and he came to join us today. What's going on, man?
Nothing. Thanks for having me. Nice little drive, about an hour south to North Tucson here.
And it's lovely this time of year here.
It is. It's way different than my house, you know. It's way, way different. But that's what's crazy. You know, we all kind of grew up here, and just to see how the valley, how much bigger the valley's gotten over the last, you know, I wouldn't want to really say my age, but 41 years, you know.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Coming from the senior member of the Angler's Happy Hour podcast.
I'm only 48, so. Yeah.
Heavy on the
now
senior.
It's weird, like, when I was in my early 20s, Brett was just a young kid fishing, and to think he's, what, 7 years younger than me? It's weird when you're 21 or... I was probably 25, actually. What were you when you started fishing the regional
type? Probably 15, 16, 14, yeah. 15, 16.
Yeah, I remember when, I think when we got to meet you, you fished a Wanbass at Lake Pleasant, right? And it was a Wanbass Pro-Am, big tournament, big regional tournament, right? And
okay.
Brett goes out and wins the darn thing. And he's just literally a high school kid, you know, and we're like, what the heck's going on here? But
it's pretty cool.
It's awesome. I mean, to be able to still be friends and
yeah, when did you guys watch, like, strike up a friendship?
It was like that time,
probably, right? Rob?
We're still not friends.
But we knew each other back then.
Yeah, we knew each other, and then after that, you know, we became friends, hanging out, rooming together a little bit on tour. And you know, like I tell everybody, I mean, that's pretty much the start of my career. So I won like 40 grand my senior in high school. I put it all in the bank, and you know, literally my career's been going ever since. I wasn't an 18-year-old kid who just went out and spent it all. I just, you know, used that was my business money, and you know, been fishing ever since.
Dude, so, I would have went all in on black. What are you doing, man?
Think you would have bought a car.
Yeah.
I couldn't even gamble yet.
Fair enough. Although I've heard those reservation casinos are much more lenient.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. They'll take your money.
Brett, let's talk about your mentor when you were young like that. I knew your dad was a big proponent of taking you and your brother fishing and getting you in the outdoors. But there was a gentleman by the name of Bucky, right?
Yeah, he's one of my dad's best friends, and you know, just, you know, getting to fish with someone, probably one of the best outdoorsmen, period, that I've ever met in my life. You know, he just was way ahead of the curve. And then, you know, I grew up power fishing, going to Alamo and San Carlos around here, and then, you know, Lake Pleasant filled, new dam, and we had to learn to be structure fishermen, and we kind of evolved together, you know, kind of on the cutting edge of using electronics before everybody else really knew what was going on. But you know, now with the mapping, fishing offshore, it's a lot different, and the playing field's a lot more even.
Yeah, shortened that learning curve, right? Yeah.
I mean, you guys were some of the first, you know, even though it wasn't that long ago, I mean, guys like you and Murray, Rob, you guys were some of the pioneers of getting out deep, drop shotting, Carolina rigging, doing that kind of stuff. Is that how you won that first tournament out offshore?
Yeah. I've caught them all deep on football jig, mostly, that tournament. Caught a couple on a Carolina rig, but that was even before, that was in 98. That was even before drop shotting even came to the U.S., I think.
The Japanese hadn't invented it yet.
That's right, or they probably did, but we weren't quick enough to pick up on it. But I think 2001 or two, no, 99, 2000 is when I first started drop shotting.
Well,
probably around 2000.
The first tournament I know of it happening was at Lake Orville, Northern California. Aaron won and Kota Kiriyami got second, and they were both drop shotting in like 80, 90 plus foot of water. Wow. Remember that? Do you agree with that, Brett?
I got fourth.
Yeah. Okay. So you were into it.
Were you drop shotting also?
Yes, and then the first tournament I actually got a check on it was Elephant Butte, which was the tournament before that.
Correct, yeah.
That Art Berry one.
Yeah.
It was weird as a... So that tournament was in like October, that Elephant, or late September, October. I went to the U.S. Open, and this guy in the back of my boat, he rigged up a drop shot, and I'm like, man, that's pretty bitchin', you know? And I'm thinking, he was just clueless. He was just casting around. But I went and got, I used a little Gamagatsu G-lock, like because there wasn't any little nose hooks or none of that stuff was even available.
So yet. What's the smallest hook you had, like a 1/0?
So I used like a number one little G-lock, just little, wide gap hook. And then I went and got a bunch of bell sinkers and tied those suckers on. And I actually drew Aaron Martins at the last day at Elephant Butte, and him and I, we jacked him up on drop shot Carolina rig and topwater. And then, of course, it just kind of snowballed from there. Orville was the big coming out of the drop shot. And so it was really kind of Coda, Aaron and I really kind of got it going that year. Actually qualified for the Classic that year, pretty much drop shot. And
wow.
Yeah, before, imagine how good drop shotting is today, and everybody does it. Imagine.
So when those fish had no idea what that was
not
down there, right?
Oh, not man. A clue. And, yeah. I mean, yeah, it was pretty cool.
It's kind of like that Nico rig that, you know, us West Coasters, supposedly, we were hiding that technique for so many years. And I'm like,
secret fishing?
Yeah, secret fishing. How long have you guys been hunting? I'm like, you guys are just stupid enough not to figure it out. You know? I mean, guys have been winning tournaments. I remember Iz Bird got like second at Lake Shasta in a Bassmaster Invitational, like in 2005 or something like that. And he's catching them on a Nico rig. We had no idea. And
the Iz rig, man. Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, the Iz rig.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they it's just weird. You know, I go to Kentucky Lake and start killing them on it, and they all think we've been holding back on some rig. It's like, no, you guys are just not that bright to pick up on it. But
and it's kind of cool to like look back and see those types of baits and presentations that completely altered the landscape, right? Like, it's cool to think that you were right there in the pioneer days of something that completely changed the face of fishing, bass fishing.
Oh yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, even today, you know, we had no idea. I mean, we thought drop shotting of, you know, light line with a little nose hook, you know, fishing vertical, and you know, of course, we still do it a lot of vertical, but I mean, it's so versatile from, you know, a foot of water to 90 feet, and you know, it's just gotten into
it's
where
unique in that sense, right?
It I is, mean, what yeah, a, it's very so versatile,
right? Big so, fish. I mean, it just yeah, it covers yeah, can, the whole board.
You know, it's probably the best smallmouth lure out there. I mean, it's just real, real versatile.
I look back at some of the seasons that we fish, and sometimes I can look back and say, dang, I drop shot it in 5 or 6 out of 8 or 9 tournaments. And those have been my best years, you know, tournaments where you get to use it. It's such a deadly technique. And it's, everyone knows about it now. Everyone does it. But it's pretty cool to be sitting by one of the guys that really, like, you know, made it popular and
then you think,
on early days.
And you think, man, like, you get so much credit, deservedly, for power fishing, right? Like, vibrating jig, completely 180 out from that, and yet you just tell a story about how you were there when, you know, it was going down. It's cool.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I started my career off being a, kind of a structure fisherman, and then after you get your teeth kicked in so much back east, you better learn how to power fish. I mean, growing up here in Arizona, we don't really have any grass lakes. So, you know, going back east, fishing top 150s, you know, I knew nothing about grass fishing. And then the California Delta is really the place that I learned how to grass fish. And, like, after I figured it out, I was like, oh, this stuff's just like structure fishing. And that's how I look at it. You know, subsurface grass is very similar to structure fishing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just like a point. Everything, you know, that's grass makes points and all sorts of stuff. Huh. Very, very similar to structure fishing. And that's why I like fishing that, you know, that subsurface grass, the stuff that you can't visually see, that you kind of have to draw it out in your mind, you know, how it looks out there. And you know, the Delta is really the place that taught me how to fish grass.
That's a heck of a training ground, you know, because we didn't have it here. And also, you learn how to fish tides there, right? And for me, anyways, that was my biggest struggle, was learning how to fish tides. And so you had a lot of training on the Delta. I started fishing, instead of driving north the Delta, I started going back east when I started fishing, you know, some semi-pro tournaments. And I never got that Delta education. So when I started fishing on the Elite Series and now Major League Fishing, the tidal fishing is my biggest weakness, man. It still kills me. But you've had some really killer tidal tournaments. Obviously, you've won at the Delta. You almost won at Winyah Bay a couple years ago. I mean, you give Delta the credit for that, huh?
Yeah. That setup at Winyah Bay was almost identical to a Delta-style tournament. Just the way where it was fishing and everything. But what I love about a tidal fishery is, you know, at some point in the day, if you're in the right spot, they are going to bite. And it's going to be like a flurry. Like, you're going to have that opportunity once or twice during the day if you're in the right stuff, where it's going to go down. And if you're ready and you execute, it's going to be
good things are going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be fireworks. You know, mm-hmm. It really is. That's what's cool. But you still got to be in the right, be in the right spot. Yeah.
Mike,
go ahead.
Do you run tides then when you're in a new area like that, or do you go into an area and fish an area?
It just depends. You know, it seems like in the springtime you can just go into an area and kind of hunker down there, and then you have a place like in the fall where those fish are just, you know, there's not as many filtering into those areas where you might actually have to run that tide.
Okay.
Or later in the summer or something like right. that. But in the spring, it really seems like you can go into area and just, you know, hunker down and fish through the tide. But obviously, you're going to know the best times of the tide cycle.
Yeah, usually like an outgoing, right? Or, you know, a low outgoing, and right when it flips back. Is that, or would you say there's generally more than that, depending on how you're fishing?
Yeah, anytime there's a switch, but yep. you know, a lot of time, even you know, before it goes slack, you know, a lot of time with that outgoing, it sucks those fish out to that outside grass line, and then on that, the way I look at it is when it's low, those fish are positioned on the outside grass line. And when it's high, they're on the inside grass line. Anytime that there's movement is always good. But obviously, when a switch from low incoming is always it's my favorite, just because it's positioned those fish out on that outside edge. And when it switches, it's fireworks.
Better be ready.
Yeah. Hold on with both hands.
That's cool. Awesome.
So, Brett, I've got a story, not to switch gears or anything, but I've got a story I want you to tell, if you recall it. Do you remember when you and I, this was a long, long time ago, we were at Lake Mead fishing up in the Overton Arm. We're driving home across the Hoover Dam, which I don't think you drive across the Hoover Dam anymore, do you?
Yeah, there's a bridge now. They built an awesome bridge.
Do you remember
bridge.
When you got pulled over by the federal police? Do you recall that?
Yeah, I got a speeding ticket.
Did you have some Colombian Bam Bam taped under your truck or anything?
Do you remember how...
Sorry, they're called Lucky Charms.
Remember how Western it got, though, when you told the officer... I mean, Brett was literally 20, 21 years old, right?
Yeah.
And he did everything by the book. Like, he was taught well by his dad. I mean, he carries a firearm. But first thing he tells the officer, he has his hands on the steering wheel, and he tells the officer, sir, I just want you to know I have a
I'm
handgun.
I'm packing heat.
Yeah. And the guy lost his, it was. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, my God, he lost it. Yeah. Big time.
Why was it such a surprise for a bass fisherman to be carrying
Arizona,
a gun?
Right?
I don't know.
Like Rob said, I did exactly what, you know, I had the handgun on the console, I had my hands on the steering wheel, and I just was straight up. Yeah. You know, with him, and the guy, he just kind of lost it. And then he's like, well, do you have a permit for that? I'm like, no, I'm in Arizona. I don't need a permit. And then he went back and ran the numbers on the gun. And, yeah, it's my gun. And
he took the gun, didn't he?
Yeah, he took it and then ran the numbers on the gun and then came back. And he's like, okay, well, you're in a federal park. You shouldn't have this. I'm like, well, no, I'm going to have it because, you know, that's
because
my
America.
Right. Yeah. America, greatest country in the world.
How long was that traffic stop for him to go through all that? Yeah. I mean, he must have been there for a minute.
Yeah. So I ended up getting a speeding ticket. But the good thing in a federal park, if you get a speeding ticket, it doesn't go on your driver's
license. How about that, man?
Wow.
Hey, there we go. We can take speed that
like
home.
Crazy. Right on. Be like cool. Ricky Bobby going yeah, across right. the dam.
Oh, you were. You were.
Got a yeah. puma in the back seat and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Rob is a puma.
He is a hell of a cougar, I'll tell you what.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. On your last ticket, Rob, not to just throw all these, to bring up all these tickets, but you had a speeding ticket. Were you technically on federal land there?
Just recently?
Yeah.
No, I was on... I was just by Saguaro Lake. And
I gotcha.
It was just by a sheriff's officer.
You got a ticket driving home from Saguaro Lake?
No, I was coming home from Payson, and I didn't slow down when it went to 35.
Dude, that is like the most rogue 35-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Dude, I was 58 and a 35. He could have written me criminal, and he was cool. But he came up to my car all smug and like tough guy, right?
Yeah.
And I told my buddy that was with me, I'm like, I'm going to try to get this guy to smile because he's just too...
Yeah,
yeah,
he's taking himself real seriously, yeah. I mean, you get it, but...
I get it, but come on, man. Yeah. I mean, so anyhow, his uniform said Lake Patrol. And I'm like, why aren't you out on the lake?
You look pretty dry, bro.
Where's your boat?
Right, where's your boat? So he said they're understaffed, and it is what it is. I got him to smile.
If we're going to just go down a rabbit hole about tickets, my best one is I used to have a GT500 Mustang years ago, and I was cruising through the nothingness of southwestern Wyoming on a state highway with nothing but antelope. It's like 4:30 in the morning. I was leaving Pinedale, and I was trying to get to Phoenix in one shot. And so I'm like an hour and a half into this drive, and I got up at 4, right, and I'm just going to do it. I was doing like maybe 100-ish in a 65.
Wow, 100-ish.
Just smoking, right? That car was beautiful. I mean, it handled the curves nice.
It was cool.
And I came over a hill, right? That's what, on those types of roads, you can see far enough that like you can shut it down if you need to. But I came up on a little hill, and there he was. So I knew it, man. Like I just neutraled it and pulled over because he had to flip a U and all that. I mean, it was going to take a while.
You were ready for him. That's nice.
And like your story too, where it's like you got hands on 10 and 2, like nothing. Man, he walked up, he drug his hand from the taillight all the way down the quarter panel right up to me.
What's that about?
I don't know. I think it's kind of like the smugness, like you said, right? Like I think he was wetting his lips for some type of, because it's 5:30 in the morning, right? Like clearly this is, but he let me go. He was cool. I got a ticket, but he wrote it down. Right. Like it was whatever 1 mile an hour below criminal was.
Oh, nice.
And life was good, but it's just funny like that. You know, you're like, oh, come on, man.
I think Montana has some speed limitless on some
Utah stretch. Certainly does too.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, you know, Utah is an 85 mile per hour zone on the interstate. So I misspoke on that.
Limitless. Does it just no sign or does it say limitless?
I
it
think
probably says
like,
throttle down.
Yeah, or hammer down.
Yeah.
I do know they have a couple. It's to the cop's discretion, you know. But, yeah.
if
but
it's
there
safe
is,
or
there
reckless
is no
or whatever.
Limit as long as, you know, within a reasonable
That's
safe.
Cool, dude.
Yeah.
Safe speed limit.
Going European style on us.
Yeah, Autobahn, baby.
I know I was safer going 58 and a 35 than the guy in the jet ski out there that morning prior.
Dude, all boozed up, hammering
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want that guy on the lake. That's all I have to say.
I hear that, man. Yeah. No kidding, dude. Right on.
That was a good rabbit hole.
Yeah. So Brett, when you started to travel back east, we're talking about, you know, driving now, man. How was it when you were like in your early 20s? What, in the early 2000s, you started fishing tournaments back east? Did you have GPS? Like, how did you find your way around, dude? I would have died without GPS.
Yeah, I mean, we had. You mean car driving GPS?
Yeah, well, both, but car driving.
Love.
How did you find
car driving? We really didn't have GPS till probably like 2006, like when those little Garmin Nuvis came out.
Yeah,
no,
I had one.
That was the deal.
State
back
of
then.
The art.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, I can like put a dot, like find a launch ramp and put a dot there and it'll take you there.
Guides you in.
Yeah, I don't really know how we got around. I'm sure there was a lot of wrong turns and had an Atlas.
Do you remember those huge red Atlases you could buy like at truck stops and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And they were like 4 feet wide.
Did you have
you
one?
You don't still use one? Come on, man.
Come on, man. Yeah, a buddy of mine, he drove my rig home from, I think it was up in Minneapolis, and he gets out of the truck and he's got a giant Atlas. I'm like, Jimmy, what are you doing? He's like, well, I he's got a flip phone. I'm like, of course.
Come join us in the 21st century. It's lovely here.
Yeah, it's all right. And he's like, man, I just got this thing. It's an updated model. Rand McNally, remember that?
Yeah.
That's the deal.
I always felt like when you got to the tournament, like the first couple of days of practice, you were just completely lost. You had no idea. But by the end of the week, you were pretty comfortable where you're going.
You could become a taxi driver there
back in the day. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you kind of get it figured out.
Nowadays, you're comfortable from the get-go, which has got to be a huge plus.
You can find any launch ramp on the lake. All these secret ones, you're like, oh, nobody's going to find this one.
There's 10
you
trucks
get up,
there.
Yeah, you get up there, there's 10 trucks, you know. You're like, darn it. But
yeah, there are no secrets between Google Earth, maps.
What other differences do you notice from traveling back when you were first starting to now? What are the new positives or negatives or...
I think a lot more guys, just lodging wise, they camp and they get cabins or, I mean, VRBO's changed, traveling. I know that's what Josh
does
a lot.
One of your big sponsors is Lance, right?
They are. Yes. So I get to, travel in my wife calls it my turtle, so I got my turtle on the back and then,
but it's comfortable though.
It's luxury turtle. I get to the campsite, that thing comes off in about 10 minutes, and then I got my regular truck and boat. But
and you got all the same group of guys you camp with, and it just becomes more of a camaraderie deal, right?
Yeah, it's nice having, when you get back there, it's almost like having kind of that family atmosphere, We could fire up the Traeger and drink a couple cold beers, and, we eat good and kind of hang out, and, everybody kind of looks out for each other. If somebody needs some help or something, but Josh and his group, they kind of do the same thing, get three or four guys and get a rental property. And they cook every night. It just, when you're on the road, as much as we are, you got to have something that kind of feels like home, even though it's not home.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's going to launch me into a question that I had. Do you have any stories of anything like we've talked about in the past on podcasts? Is there any like gross, nasty hotel or like accommodation stories prior to the luxury turtle and this lifestyle?
Oh, I mean,
any
I don't
bloody
have
mattresses
one that,
or anything.
I don't have one that like actually sticks out in my mind. But Rob and I together, I'm sure him and I, we
Clear
stayed.
Lake,
yeah,
Motel 8s across the country can vary widely,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, it, cool. It's. We've stayed in some serious dives. Now it's like, Holiday Inn Express is like my stable.
The gold standard,
If I'm going to stay in a hotel, I don't care if it's 100 plus, 110, 120 bucks a night.
Yeah, they're
but
consistent.
Like,
they realize that too. They realize we'll pay whatever for a decent stay along the road, right?
Instead of the old strip motel where it's like,
you just have no idea what you're going to get.
Well, some of those are good ones and some of them are bad ones, but... I mean, if you know it's a good one, it's not bad, but man, the bad ones are bad. I just want to make sure that for us, just make sure our stuff is safe.
Yeah.
Right.
And if I'm actually going to stay in a hotel, I want it to be a halfway decent one. I mean, free waffles at least,
Yeah, right. Come on now.
I gotta get some breakfast.
Yeah.
On the last podcast, two podcasts ago, we had Lucas over the phone, and he talked about a time he was trying to save like 15 bucks a night over at Okeechobee, and
that's
he got bed bugs. Yeah, exactly.
Old alligator arms.
he got bed bugs, man, him and his buddy Andy. Oh. And, it was apparently the worst night of their lives.
Yeah, Kevin Hawk got bed bugs one night, too.
God, that's got to be the worst.
Thank God.
And
I've
he's such a clean
that.
Freak, dude.
Oh, yeah. That I'm sure that just freaked him out. But, yeah, it's... I think those times are past us a little bit, I hope.
If you can avoid it,
at this stage in my life, it's like, okay, I'll go for the extra 40 bucks a night and actually have a nice...
Spoil yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the time I'm always in the Lance and the Turtle, but every once in a while it's like, just traveling. And
yeah, it just
I'll
sets
like,
up
I'll just
that
pull,
way, right?
I'll just pull over and get a decent hotel.
Heck yeah. Right. I love the first trip of the year. The last several years, I've been lucky enough to be able to draft off of Brett behind the turtle the entire way.
And your miles per gallon increases
30%. I'll be like, dude, I'm getting way better gas mileage. And he's like, because you're drafting off me, dude. Come on.
Yeah,
you take the lead for a while.
Yeah. That thing moves a little air, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's like, I'm getting like 15 miles of the gallon. I'm like, dude, well, you should be paying me some gas.
Getting five.
I should get a royalty off that deal.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
This year, I'll fill up your tank once.
Okay. It's only a 45-gallon tank.
That's 100 plus bucks. Yeah.
Don't you hate it when you go to fill it up and it shuts off and you got to
restart it all over again?
And then they say see cashier because they won't let you put the card in twice.
Stolen credit card alert, right?
That's got to be one of the biggest differences with fishing today versus back more when I was fishing the bigger tournaments. I mean, we'd go to Pal and gas would be $1 a gallon, right? I mean, we'd cringe at filling a 50-gallon tank. Nowadays, I mean, that's $150.
You can't even look at it or think about it.
You can't. It's just part of the experience. You would, yeah. Yeah,
I completely agree. You know, it's just part of your expense, you know.
How do young guys start nowadays with the cost? It's just got to be. But I guess it's just relative to what.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, I mean, they looked at it the same way.
We did back then. Yeah, it is what it is, right?
It's just the evolution of it and inflation.
Yeah.
Relative to what you know, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of getting gas, I might have texted a couple guys last night, one had mentioned that you may have one time put regular gas into a diesel truck.
Yeah, that happened once at Lake.
I hear it's good for them.
It is. Yeah, they run. They run.
It cleans them out.
They run hot. That was at Okeechobee a few years ago. I was all excited to go pre-fishing because I love that place. Well, I used to, but. I go to the BP. It's right across the street from the KOA, and I'm like all jacked up. Yeah, I'm in Okeechobee. I love this place. And put the handle in,
the black one.
I put the handle in, go inside, grab a bag of ice, and I come back out and I just grab the green handle. You know, well at BP, the green handle.
That's
at
a
BP
simple mistake,
is unleaded.
Dude. Yep.
Is unleaded instead
damn
of
Brits.
Like, yeah, it's like, well, you guys are, I mean, it should be uniform, you know?
Oh, yeah,
it should
that's
be.
A terrible
be
idea.
I put the card in, I grabbed the green handle, the diesel pump was, I grabbed it, put it in there, and I come back out and I look at it and I'm like, you idiot. So I just like,
That's legitimate, though.
So what are they, yellow for diesel then?
BP yellow or black or something like that.
Dude, if it's black, that's just a dirty joke, you know?
I mean, $600 later, we got it all fixed up.
Did you have to get your truck towed?
Yeah. I was, luckily, Kobe Krieger, you know, a buddy of mine, he lives in that area. So I called him. I'm like, hey, do you know somebody? Like, he's like, well, I know a guy at the Chevy dealership. They own the Ford dealership. So I started up and pulled it like into a parking spot, unhooked the boat, and then Sarah Tharp and Randall Tharp, they have two trucks, so she let me borrow their Ford truck that day. And so guy was awesome, came, picked it up, they towed it like half, you know, 2 miles down the road to the dealership and drained everything out. You know, all the fuel filters, everything. And luckily, I mean, it's still a pain in the butt. That was a legitimate. My buddy John Strelick did the identical thing at Chickamauga at a BP, and I gave him a bunch of you know what for a long time. And then Courtney, my wife's like, see, you shouldn't talk smack. You shouldn't talk smack.
Oh, you were giving him smack prior to doing it yourself?
Yes.
Oh, you karmed that one into your life.
Yeah, I karmed that one. I mean, but he put like 40 gallons in. Oh. I put like 15, but it still didn't matter.
Way better.
So you drop $120 on putting the wrong fuel in your truck, and then you spend another couple $100 pumping it back out. That's like the triple whammy of
and then you need gas after and it's then, all said and done. You gotta go back again.
I gotta go fill it up again.
I know a guy that put urea fluid in his tank.
Yeah, that's
$15,000 later.
Oh,
he had his truck back.
New engine,
the whole new injection system,
correct,
and everything, huh?
Correct.
Yeah, That's a bad deal.
Yep. So,
wow. Anyhow.
Dang. Okay. How about running out of gas on I-10? I'm sorry, dude.
We're gonna invite you on and beat you up.
Who's the buddy? My goodness.
Yeah. That's all right.
You'll know who it is, dude.
Yeah.
You know who it is? Guess.
John Murray.
No.
Who was with me? You were, weren't you?
No. Well, I don't know if he was with you, but Ayler told me about this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, maybe he was with me. I don't know. But, yeah, I got, like, literally 5 miles from the gas station. I knew I was going to run out. And Murray was with me, too. And he's like, they went and got a little can of diesel fuel.
5 gallon.
Yeah, I had enough, like, according to the mileage, but I didn't equate into like a 30 mile an hour headwind.
Dude, they'll eat your lunch every time. Yeah.
Was this past like past El Paso? You know, in that dead zone over there.
Yeah.
No man's land.
Yeah, no man's land, in between Fort Stockton and San Antonio. Yeah.
I gotcha.
Those should give you a freebie on Ayler. What do you got on Ayler?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I can dig.
Yeah, you paid some dues, man. You're good.
Yeah, I can dig.
He said his son Ollie calls you his worst enemy.
He does, yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
It's aggressive.
Yeah.
Seem like a nice enough guy.
I don't like know.
Like Uncle
why.
Brett.
Yeah.
Cool Uncle Brett, man.
Yeah, Uncle Bretters, you know.
How old's Ollie?
Ollie's like 7 now.
Okay.
7 or 8. But yeah, he gets on the phone. You're my worst enemy.
Love you too, like, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. And then what was funny is I stayed at their house a couple nights last year, and we're playing some card games and stuff. And Ollie, you know, after I get there, then him and I are buddies, because he calls me his worst enemy because when he's hanging out with Uncle Bretters, he gets in trouble a lot. And I just have that tendency to get kids in trouble a lot for some reason.
An influence.
Egg them on or what?
Yeah. No, not me.
Never.
And so by the time we got done playing card game, he had lost his privilege to play Fortnite for like a month and a half.
Oh, my.
Nicely done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's.
Yeah, so Bretters kind of got Ollie in trouble. I mean, that just kind of goes to the fact.
You're teaching us a new vocabulary, hand gestures.
That may be part of it. Yeah.
Well, I mean. It's just what I do. You know, it's like with my nieces and nephews. I mean, they definitely get in trouble after, you know, like Christmas. They're always in trouble hanging out with Uncle Brad.
But they love you, dude.
I think
that's
the key.
But, you know,
yeah, that's the key.
I think you did him a favor not having to play Fortnite.
No kidding, yeah. Right? He's going to thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then he started having a tantrum. They're like, okay, that's another weekend. And I'm like, oh boy. Dude, you better just stop, yeah. Man.
All right. Let her down easy.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. But I was like, sorry, buddy. And
that
then,
Fortnite.
Then he was mad at me, you know?
Yeah.
I don't
can't
know
win.
He's holding it against you now, man.
Oh, yeah. That's how it always is.
So, my 4-year-old son was learning, they're teaching him basic letters and sign language and stuff. And so, my daughter was watching along. And I was like, well, they taught you how to count to 10, right? So, you know, one finger, two, da 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 da.
Sure.
I was like, do you guys know how to count to 11? And they looked at me and double birds. Then my daughter went around for a week telling people that. I was like, I can count to 11 with my hands. It's like, all right.
Good
throttle
job,
back on that.
Yeah.
But oopsie it's kind of
daisy.
The fun of kids, right? We're going to go through all the diaper changes and all the noise if you don't teach them a few bad things along the way, right? Yeah. Kind of what it's all about.
Ours is repeating everything, our 3-year-old right now. And Chantel the other day had told me to get off my phone, you know, with a word in there. And now every time Emma sees me on my phone, she'll walk by and go, get off your phone.
F-phone? Is it the F-phone?
Possibly.
Yeah, possibly.
Dude, it's brutal to hear that out of a 3-year-old, dude.
Oops.
You can't teach them anything that you feel like you should, and then you slip on one thing and they're all over you, right? It shows you how smart they are.
That's
know.
The truth.
They're watching. Yeah.
They're ignoring when you're telling them, when you're trying to tell them to do something. It's like they can't hear you, but they're taking everything in.
Oh, music's the other one that gets me in trouble, man. I'll plug my phone in my car or something, and it starts playing. And, of course, it's alphabetical, and the first song is a pretty dirty rap song within, like, the first 15 seconds.
Perfect.
My daughter loves it. She's like, oh, it's the F-word song. Like, hey, earmuffs.
Yeah. But, yeah. Shut that down.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, Brett, we not only hit up Ayler, but we also hit up another buddy of yours, and we learned that you were into bull riding.
I haven't been bull riding lately.
Mechanical bull riding.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have a video. Obviously, we're not going to be able to play it, but we're going to pass it around. These guys are going to watch it. So,
granted, knowing that you've had a lot of success as a bass fisherman.
Looks watching his form in this video.
Yeah.
Do you know who sent that?
Yeah, I got a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a second career.
I'm going for the half-second bull ride.
Yeah.
Dude, that video is more than 8 seconds long.
Was that the one and only attempt? Is that the one you were talking about?
Yeah, I think I pulled my groin when I did it, too.
Just out having fun, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was at the Buffalo Chip.
Where's that, up by where you live?
Yeah,
the Buffalo Chip is a good time.
Yeah, it's a blast, but you get, you know, a few beers deep, and you're like, yeah,
you ride
a
mechanical
bull, you know? And then the person I'm really mad at is my wife. She sent that to Patrick.
And he sent it everywhere.
Yeah, and she goes, what was weird is, like, few days, maybe three or four days later, she's like, I might have messed up. And I'm like, what? I don't like the sound of this.
Yeah, this is starting out well.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, we were, you know, we're watching The Voice, having a nice night.
Her timing was impeccable. Yeah. Smart woman.
Like, okay, and then I look at her, I'm like, what do you mean you might have messed up? Well, I might have sent Patrick a video of you riding the bull. I'm like, are you kidding me? She goes, well, it won't be that bad. I'm like, yes,
worst dude
will.
Ever. Yeah, for that.
Yeah, so now, you know, I get these, you know, like, I'm holding like a photo a snapshot of it with like, you know, words and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, now see what you did? Oh, I didn't think he'd do that.
I didn't think he'd do that.
Yeah.
He took it and ran with it.
Yeah. I go, you know, Patrick. Well, I didn't think it would be that bad. Yeah. Uh-huh. Thanks, honey.
So now it comes up on a podcast too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Sorry,
but
Brett.
Not that anyone see that video. You did well, man. It's more than 8 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, there
you go. Video is. But
I know you're up there for a while. You're good. Yeah, good. Don't sell yourself short.
Put the hammer down, you know. You could fly off that thing so easy, dude, if I wanted to.
We were joking. Whoever runs the mechanical bull at a bar is the owner of the establishment. Think of the liability. You get someone all liquored up.
Do you have to sign a waiver when you get on it?
No.
Not give away your firstborn or anything.
Then Nick is right.
Dude, imagine that. Like, that's a... Maybe we should start a class action lawsuit.
It is. Yeah. I think I severely injured my groin.
Yeah.
I know I did.
Yeah.
I could be out for the season.
Dude, oh, boy.
Learner in row. You got
the way to go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What, dude, is that a Packers bar or a Steelers bar? I can't remember.
That's the Packers bar. The Herald's is the Steelers bar.
Down the street, right?
Oh, yeah, right across the street. So Friday nights is bull riding there. It's pretty fun. I mean, we usually go to dinner and then go there. We were there a couple weekends ago, and Friday nights is the bull riding. It's pretty cool. They got campfires for all the kids to do s'mores.
That's awesome. A great place,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, after about 10 o'clock, it turns into a full-on, you know, bar.
Rager.
But they got live music. But I think bull riding goes till about 11 or something like that. But it's when it's nice out, it's awesome.
You ever been there, Rob?
I've not been to that bar. I've been to that part. Brett and I went and ate lunch one time up in that area. It's just a cool part.
It's
of
cool,
the
right? I've only been there one time on a night where it goes.
This time of year, it becomes pretty.
It's busy.
Packed. Yeah, because you know there's a lot of tourists and whatnot there, but it's a cool area.
And then you got there's a kind of that whole biker scenes in that Cave Creek area.
You know, Sons of Anarchy going on.
Yeah. I mean, you can see it all.
Now, mostly it's, I think, doctors and lawyers from Scottsdale acting like they're...
Yeah.
They have bikes and a jacket, huh?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They got a leather vest, and they're all patched up. They look like a bunch of bass pros at a team tournament.
And there it is.
So right.
Motorcycle equivalent.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Jim and I's doing their leather vest.
That's good stuff.
That's funny, man. Dude, how are you liking fantasy football, man? Like, this is your first year. I got Nick involved in the league too, but like, what do you think about it so far, man?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, some weeks you get your brains beat in, and then some weeks you're like, oh, I know what's going on.
Feel all
here.
Smart,
yeah,
right? Like, yeah, I'm gonna crush it.
Then you get killed, you know.
Did you get the text scolding everyone?
How about that
last night?
Yeah.
From Meyer.
Everyone play nice.
Yeah, everybody play nice and stuff, like trading.
Well, yeah, apparently a couple guys got a little too heated because some trades were getting vetoed and some weren't. And I guess three guys have to veto a trade for it not to be approved. And one of the guys in our league got very upset that his trade got vetoed and someone else's did.
Who was that?
Take a guess, dude.
Who, Meyer?
Well, Lucas, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Lucas got vetoed.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Well, here's the problem. I mean, I think that is good because, you know, then whoever's doing well, you could team up and get a bunch of good guys, you know, and then really start. Lucas. Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, him trying to, you know.
You got Meyer trying to trade with Claussen, and
Lucas
is like, oh, you know, Claussen's not paying attention, so anyone that is trading with Claussen's taking advantage of him, you know.
Right.
So, either way, dude, it's been fun, but it's been funny to watch him.
And then
how'd
Zona get in on the whole text?
Dude, Zona was running Ehlers all year long, and no one knew it.
Yeah.
So we thought. I asked Ehler at our last tournament. I'm like, "Who are you playing this week?" He's like, "Dude, I have no idea, man. Zona's running my team."
That's hilarious.
I think he did auto draft though the whole time.
Yeah, he may have just auto-drafted and then gave Zona his password, and then Zona's making, like, all the moves, you know? Apparently, Zona's pretty good fantasy football.
Well, his
football
kids
guy.
Are, like, fantasy football, like, studs.
Are they?
Yeah.
That's cool. It's really fun, man. It's ruined a couple of my Sundays, though, because, like, you're looking forward to it so much, and then it starts going bad, and it's like, dang, man, But one cool thing about your team.
I did beat Ayler not this last week, the week before, so I'll talk a bunch of smack to Zona now. Be like, dude.
Yeah, you know where to direct it.
Exactly. Yeah, now I know.
Ayler wouldn't even care.
Yeah, I was like, hey, I'm playing this week. He never told me that, and he's one of my best friends.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's great. That's funny. Yeah, he came out last night, like, officially, like, hey, boo.
He came out of the closet.
Yeah, he did.
Is this your first year doing it, Brett?
I've done it one other time
in other leagues,
a few years ago, just with some friends. But yeah, it always gets a little heated. Somebody always gets their panties in a wad, you know.
Yeah, people taking it more seriously than others, right?
Yeah, and then, it's like, dude, whatever. I mean, you know,
it's a bunch of grown men. Well, it is hovered around an iPhone.
$800 you're trying to win, right?
Yeah,
$800, man.
Life changing, right there.
The
cool thing about Brett's team, I appreciate his loyalty. He drafted several Cardinals players.
All right.
Yeah.
And actually, like, Kyler Murray has worked out pretty well. He's pretty dang good, man, on the fantasy numbers.
Yeah, I should have played him this. I got killed. I've been playing Kyler Murray, and I have Aaron Rodgers. So I benched Aaron Rodgers. And then Aaron Rodgers scores like 48 fantasy points.
Guaranteed win with that in your lineup.
Yeah, and then the next week I go with Rodgers, and he scores another like 25. And then this week I play Rodgers. He scores like 12, and Kyler Murray scores 25, and that's why
it's freaking.
Yeah, you just don't know.
Yeah,
you know. But there's some guys who are like, oh yeah, that defense is gonna be good. They got a really good rusher. It's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, come on, man. It's like
random
as possible.
Yeah, the pundits they're looking at the obvious, you know, predictions. You know, like you said, this team's got a great pass rush, or this team's got a terrible pass rush. But the coaches are trying to do the absolute opposite, you know? Like, we're all expecting something, but the coaches are 100 times smarter than us when it comes to the scheming, so they're going to scheme against the stuff everyone in the world expects. That's why it doesn't always go the way they expect. It's almost
right.
We're gamblers, though, as fishermen, so.
Yeah. Competitive and gamblers, right? Like, that. Yeah. They need a support group.
That's why it's turned so nasty.
We can all, like, start with an opening prayer or something, get our 12 steps going.
I'm not giving it up. It's too fun.
Said every addict ever.
Yeah.
Nobody likes a quitter.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So enough fantasy football. We want to go technical one more time here before we start wrapping this thing up. And instead of just, you know, I guess asking you your general thoughts on a certain technique or something, we got together and tried to think of some questions that our listeners might ask, stuff that we get asked on Fishing a Vibrating Jig. And just fishing in general. But, you know, some questions I get all the time. If you're going out to buy your first vibrating jig, what size are you buying, man? What's the best all around?
Probably a half ounce. You know, I used to use a lot of 3/8, and then, you know, I've just been using more half ounce, especially if you're fishing. What I tell people, if you're fishing Florida, probably a 3/8 ounce most of the time, just because that grass is lot, you know, it's higher to the surface.
It's growing,
you know, a little
taller. Uh-huh.
And then if you're fishing any type of reservoir, half ounce or 3/4 ounce, you know, so, you know, it just varies. There's a lot of different sizes that we have now. But if I just had to, you know, pick a color and a size, that'd be a green pumpkin half ounce chatterbait with a green pumpkin Yamamoto Zako.
Perfect. Yeah, I'd go with half too. You guys too?
Yeah, for sure. What percentage?
Rob's a professional chatterbait fisherman.
I've caught like 4 bass on it, so
yeah,
stop.
Yeah, yeah. He caught, you know, like 3 years ago, he's like, hey, man, I still have not caught one on that thing.
I have now, Brett.
Well,
stop.
I know you have now, but I mean,
on one hand,
funny.
Can you
I'm
count
like,
it?
Oh, yeah. Come on, man, really? I go, dude, you love throwing a spinnerbait. I know, I just can't catch him on it. And then he calls me. He's like, hey, I went to Canyon, and I killed him on that thing.
That one time I did.
Hell of a day.
He's semi-professional.
You know, Josh doesn't even throw a spinnerbait. Like, he thinks a spinnerbait is so retro.
Dude, we left that millennium 19
Stop.
Years ago.
It's still coming back.
Because it's retro now.
There was a lot of bass caught this year on Bass Pro Tour on spinnerbait.
There were, dude.
Weird,
yeah.
huh?
That's, yeah.
Every story that Rob tells starts with, Yeah, and I was going down the bank throwing a spinnerbait.
Yeah, for sure.
It's coming back, dude.
A white and chartreuse blade of Yamamoto.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You won a lot of money on that thing.
Yeah. Some, here and there, but.
Is green pumpkin, here's maybe a stupid question because I'm known for that. Green pumpkin, is that more of a bluegill color, you think, or is it just bait fish in general? It just looks good and natural.
Yeah, I think it's a bluegill color. Uh-huh. You know, I usually put a little chartreuse on the tail, and it's just such a natural, versatile color. You could fish it at Lake Mead where you can see 30 feet of water, or you can fish it in mud, and it shows up good in mud too. So I mean, it's so versatile and looks natural. That's why if you look at my jackhammer lineup, there's so many offshoots of green pumpkin, just because it goes with a bunch of different colors. You can do green pumpkin red, green pumpkin black and blue, green pumpkin with a shad belly. I mean, it's a cool one, dude. Yeah, there's just a lot of variations where you can make it look real natural, and you can highlight other colors with it.
Cool, makes sense. Yeah.
Right on. That's good. So that kind of covers my next one, color selection on that one. If someone is losing fish on it, what advice do you have?
It's usually the rod. That's the probably the number one thing is the rod. Here's what I can tell somebody. When they look at a chatterbait or a vibrating jig, they look at it and they think it's a jig, okay? And so they put it on a heavy action graphite rod or medium heavy graphite rod. And what you got to think of that bait is more like a crankbait. So here's a good reason why, in my theory, which doesn't really mean anything,
in my head,
okay, so like we use a graphite rod for a spinnerbait, like a medium heavy graphite rod is probably about what a spinnerbait rod is, right? So think about this. When you're winding a spinnerbait, a fish eats it, think about how much flex is in a spinnerbait, okay? So that's why you have to have a little bit stiffer rod, okay? Now, with the chatterbait, you have direct pull. There is no give from that clip to the hook. So you got somewhere you have to give that, you got to have some kind of give in the rod or line or whatever it is.
So, otherwise, you're just pulling right out of their mouth, right?
Yeah, you're just pulling it out of their mouth, and they're not a lot of time not being able to eat the bait.
They're just getting skin hooked on the lips instead of the roof of their mouth.
So that's why we use a stiffer rod for a spinnerbait, because there's so much flex in a spinnerbait that we need that stiffer rod. And with the chatterbait, you know, I'm using like a heavy action glass rod that has a lot of big parabolic bend to it. So it still has power, but it's more like
some
a heavy action
great
crankbait rod. So that's the number one thing. If people are losing them, it's usually the rod.
And your line's like a 20-pound fluorocarbon.
I always use fluorocarbon. I mean, if I was to use braid, then you're going to have to probably
lighten that
soften
up,
the rod even
soften
more.
The rod, you know. I mean,
and you go too soft, it becomes hard to cast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's not as accurate. It's like, you know, casting a rubber band around, you know. So,
good sling either way, yeah.
Yeah, it's not as accurate. That's the number one thing is people are throwing the wrong rod.
That makes sense.
And when I get the bite, it's crank on those suckers. You know, you got 20-pound line. I mean, don't play them like you got them on a crankbait. I mean, I get after
get them in the boat.
Get them in the boat, just like you're flipping.
That's one of my favorite things with the few that I have caught on a chatterbait is absolutely wrenching them and just reel.
Yeah,
yank them in the boat.
I mean, just never stop reeling and get them up to the boat and I mean get them in there.
Yeah.
I mean don't be, you know, just playing them out of the boat unless it's, you know, 10-pound or something.
Yeah. which can happen.
Wait, you don't boat flip those?
Well, I mean, you can. If you've caught a lot that day, then you boat flip them. But, yeah. You know, I caught one at Clear Lake that I never weighed. That was probably an 11 or 12-pounder. I mean, it was a gigantic bass. But this year I probably caught, two biggest that I remember weighing I caught the Bass Pro Shop MLF. I got the big bass record right now at like a 9.12 or 9.13.
Biggest of all time, dude.
Yeah, so far, you know. I mean, I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll probably somebody will break it this year. And then in North Carolina at those three lakes that we went. I forget the names of those lakes, but yeah, I caught one there. It was like a 9-14, and it was
in practice. Which was it? Jordan or
at Jordan? At Jordan.
That lake was ridiculous as far as the quality of the fish.
Yeah, giant ones. And that the thing, it was, I bet it was like 22 inches long, and it was, I mean, it was just a
beast of a specimen.
Just beautiful fish. But I've caught so many eights and nines on that thing, and besides that one at Clear Lake, I knew it was a real, real big one that I, but those are, I pretty much almost had 2 10-pounders this year, just one in a tournament and one just goofing off.
That's crazy. So,
hell of a bait, man.
Yeah, it's a big fish bait.
It is, yeah. I mean, it gets bites, and it gets quality bites, too. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
No kidding.
It's funny watching Major League Fishing when they're eating that thing, and all of a sudden every guy is throwing it, whacking them on it, you know. Yeah. It's pretty impressive bait.
Yep.
You can cover water, find fish, catch them, and again, catch Work that bigger structure. Than average size. Yeah.
I think it's like the new spinner bait. I mean, fish never get tired of a spinner bait, and they're never, ever going to get tired of that bait. You know? Yeah.
It just looks natural. It's phenomenal in grass, and, you know, that's what's kind of funny is when I first started winning on it in 2008, I thought it was just a grass bait, and now you look at it, it's like you can throw it anywhere that you throw a spinner bait. Rock, riprap, you know, trees, brush. I mean, it's any place, and that's what I tell people. Hey, how do I get, you know, fishing a chatterbait? And it's like, I'd fish it just like you'd, you know, any place that you'd fish a spinnerbait.
Right.
You know, you can fish a 3/4 ounce or 1 1/4 ounce and go fish it slow roll it, or you can fish it in, you know, 1/2 foot of water.
Did you originally start throwing it on a stiffer rod, a heavier action rod, or how did you get to that? How did you get to that, to the glass rod? It's
kind of counterintuitive, right?
I started throwing all my reaction baits on a parabolic rod, just, and I started throwing on that.
Because you're kind of the star. I believe you're the one that started the glass rod with the chatterbait, right?
Yes, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, because a lot of people were throwing it. But the chatterbait was known for, you know, people losing fish on it.
Right.
And after I kind of... You know, I mean, I just kind of, I don't want to say I got lucky, but
after
thinking about, you know, what it is, and I had those heavier action glass rods built prior to the, you know, to
experimenting
using,
with it,
yeah, mm-hmm. to using the chatterbait. So it just kind of all got in line. I really like casting with a fiberglass rod or heavy glass action rod. You can be a lot more accurate, and you know, it just works really, really well on reaction baits.
That's cool. That's a good question, man. I just kind of how you found it. Last question on that topic, and we'll wrap up here. Is there a specific time or condition where they don't eat it? Like, you know, is there a time when you should tell people probably better to throw something else?
It's hard to tell, you know. I what I tell people is if the fish are in 10 foot or less, you should be able to catch them on it. But we always know there's those times when they're in 10 foot or less and they don't want a reaction bait, you know, or they just, you know, or every bass in the lake seen a jackhammer go by.
Sure.
But and that's why a lot of time, you know, my 1-2 putch is a swim jig. After I've gone through an area where I've caught some really good ones, I'll go back and let's say – you know, high skies, no wind. Of course, that's not going to be as good, but it seems like with that swim jig, I can, you know, catch those fish on those tougher conditions or pressured conditions in those same areas.
So you'll turn back with a swim jig and go through the same area you just caught them with the jackhammer?
I will, yeah. Especially if those, I mean, I would say, you know, if those conditions change and it gets real dead slick calm and high skies and it's just not
something more subtle.
Yeah, something more subtle. I mean, that's when you need to pick up the worm or start flipping or throw a drop shot or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. If you're in that like bluebird sky, really clear water, like clear water is a big deal. If you have clear water, I think in my experience, you need to be able to hit something, whether it's run it through grass or bang it off of something, or you need the weather conditions to line up really well. Like you could catch bass on the most crystal clear lake on a vibrating jig, especially if it's like a green pumpkin,
if it's
overcast skies, wind, something like that. But it's one of those baits that you just need one of those things going for you, and you can catch fish on it. But if you're just straight bluebird, you can't it's super clear water, you can't bang it into something. Like Brett said, maybe something a little bit more silent that doesn't thump like that.
That's right. Yeah. It's but I've caught them in every month of
that's
of
crazy.
The year.
That's
you know,
pretty awesome.
The fish just have to be in little, you know, up in that water column a little bit. And you know, they, you just got to have the right conditions. Of course, you know, clear lake or clear water, you definitely want a little breeze, and, you know, a little bit more stained, it doesn't matter quite as much. But still, I mean, reaction bait's always going to be a little better with a little breeze.
Mm-hmm. For sure, mm-hmm. For sure. I remember when Amistad was, like, on fire, like, late 2000s. We went down there, and I was kind of just getting my feet wet into traveling around and fishing different lakes. But, you know, back here, Roosevelt was pretty full, and that Green Pumpkin vibrating jig, that chatterbait, was killing it in that clear water. So I went and did it at Amistad, and those fish, it was unbelievable. And that was a situation where the water was clear, but it didn't matter, dude. Like was a situation where it could be bluebird, and dude, you throw
just
that thing just open water over trees across points, and this fish would be mowing it down like it was a bluegill. And I mean, it was crazy, but that was a unique situation. There aren't very many places in the country now that are like Amistad was 10 years ago. I mean, I don't know if there is one at all.
Yeah. Or like how Falcon was, you know, I mean, those two lakes, they're, you know, late 2000s, you know, they were just unbelievable.
Yeah, crazy.
Falcon was unbelievable. Amistad was unbelievable. That whole chain was just on fire. But, they're still good, you know. I think Falcon's better than Amistad.
For big ones, for sure.
Yeah.
They're like our desert lakes. They just cycle.
Yeah. Right? When they go down, everything grows up. You have that new lake effect, which is awesome, you know. So you just get those big cycles, and it'll be good for, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years, and then it'll be off for a while.
Makes sense. All right. Well, awesome, dude. Thanks for all that. Last quick question. You play a lot of golf. I do too, but you bring your clubs on tour, dude. Who are the who's the best golfer on tour that you play with?
Oh, I would say the two best is probably Bobby Lane and Paul Elias is really good.
Really,
Paul has hurt his shoulder, so he's been a little under the weather for the last year, and he's had surgery on it. But Paul plays a lot at home. You know, I just like getting out and doing something different than fishing all the time. You know, drink some beers with our buddies. I've been getting better, but, you know, there's just like fishing, there's those some days where you're like, I really suck at this.
It's a brutal sport, dude. Yeah, it's a brutal sport.
I'll just go put the sticks down for like a couple of weeks and be like, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But, you know, right now and the AZ is like the perfect time to go golfing.
Are you going every week right now?
I have been. I might actually even go this afternoon. You know,
nice,
you never
right
know.
On, dude.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good day for it.
Yeah, at least go hit some balls around. Try to take some big divots out of the old practice driving range.
Did you put a putting green at your house when you moved in?
No putting green.
I need that. That's by far. I mean, my putting is just embarrassing.
I played really good about a week and a half ago, and I like every single hole, I would like 3 or 4 putt. I'm like, God, I just sucked. Jeez.
It's hard to get it all firing on one,
man. Like having a birdie putt or a par putt and then like 3 putt. It's like, dude, you suck.
That's
it's
annoying.
Like, get in your hole. I want to be like what old...
Happy Gilmore, man. You need to get a hockey stick.
Yeah, I do.
That's your problem.
A hockey stick. I need to
I've heard those are better putters.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just get like a... a short fishing rod. I bet I could pitch it in the hole. I know I could pitch.
Oh,
I could probably cast it in the hole way better.
Can you imagine the looks of disgust you'd get on the golf course if you were doing that?
Yeah, just roll casting it in there.
That's great. Right on. Well, hey, you guys got anything else for Brett before we let him roll?
I kind of feel bad, man. We beat you up. We talked about putting the wrong type of fuel in your truck, falling off mechanical bowls.
Hey,
you might
take it.
He can take it. It's all good.
We'd like to have you back on, but we might understand if you kind of avoid Josh or Rob's phone calls for a while.
Yeah, you'll have to come up to South Flag where I live.
Yeah.
We'd love to, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, dude. Thanks very much. You got anyone you want to thank or anything like that before we roll?
I just want to thank you guys. I mean, you know, it's cool. You know, something new and fresh. I've known Rob for like 25 years. Him and I, we've been good buddies for a long time, and known Josh since he started fishing. And Nick, I just
17 minutes and
yeah,
counting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's gonna be a lifelong friendship. Hey, I can feel it though. We have a bond.
I had you at hello though.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, dude. Absolutely. You walked up the driveway into this beautiful podcasting booth that we have in Josh's garage, and it was over.
That's awesome. I mean, it is. You know, we're looking at a bunch of baits, and you know, I mean, things are.
It's a pretty cool setting.
All these new Berkeley Spy baits that Josh just got. You know, it looks like that's all he throws.
He's a one approach kind of guy. Yeah. What can we say?
I get him pretty cheap, dude.
You do? Yeah.
I heard he's got an angle on him.
Yeah.
Well, Brett, we want to wish you a good season next year, and have fun and be safe and do well.
Thanks. Happy holidays, everybody, too.
Thanks.
You too. Let's go to lunch. Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. We had a great time with Brett. We're rolling out a pretty cool contest where the winner will receive a $100 Bass Pro gift card. Make sure to follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Anglers Happy Hour for how to enter. We're also really, really appreciating those 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you like the podcast and want to give us a review, we'd appreciate it big time. We'll talk to you next time.